What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Nightmares Podcast, where we talk about all things horror, whether it be movies, music, or some really kick-ass fucking horror novels. Today, we, of course, have my usual partner in crime, Mr. Zachary Smith, here.
What's up?
And today, we have a fantastic writer, Mr. James Sabata. Please introduce yourself, sir.
Sure. So I'm a horror author. I don't even know how many books now. Fat Camp, The Cassowary, Whodunner is more of a raunchy murder mystery, but it's still in there. A couple short story collections like Pocketbook of Doom, and I have a new short story collection coming out, I don't know, maybe September-ish, and it's called Little Goodbyes, and it's basically all children who are victims or perpetrators. So, you know, should be huge, huge selling. Everybody loves kids dying, right?
Ever since It and Stranger Things, yep.
But yeah.
So
no, outside of that, then I'm a screenwriter. Or you know, there's a strike going on, so maybe I'm not. But then I have a podcast called TheNecronomicon.com, where every week we talk about different horror films as social commentary. We passed 1 million downloads in March. So that was pretty sweet. And then I am also the founder and director of Spirited Giving, which is a pop-up horror-themed fundraiser. Last year, we were at the Stanley Hotel, and we raised almost $10,000 for a local volunteer fire department.
Very nice. Very, very
cool. That's me. There you go.
Awesome. James, you got so much great stuff going on. That's super fucking awesome. I obviously knew you as a really good friend of James Zara and an author of a really, really awesome book. James Zara introduced us, which is great. We love James. James was sitting over here only a couple months ago. So we'll get into it right now. We start every podcast off with, when did horror enter your life?
All right. So the earliest that I remember, I was probably about 8, and I was being watched by the teenager who lived next door, and she just put in Friday the 13th Part 3, and I just sat there utterly terrified for 90 minutes while this guy went around like popping people's eyes out of their head and shit, and now I'm slightly obsessed with Jason. And outside of that, the next one that I clearly recall, I stayed at my cousin's house a lot when I was growing up, and we just watched anything that we could get a hold of. And one night, Texas Chainsaw Massacre came on, and I was probably like 10 or so, I don't even know. And I was really into it. I loved it. I was like, oh, that wasn't that scary. And then the next day I went home and I was taking a bath, and my neighbor decided to chainsaw his tree, and I was just in the bathtub just bawling, and I wouldn't tell my parents why, because I didn't want to get in trouble for watching this movie. Oh, man. And so, yeah, I wrote about it in Fat Camp at the very end. It's in the afterword. And when my mom read the book, she's like, that's why you were crying? We thought something horrible happened to you. And, you know, that was like 5 years ago. So there's been a bit of a gap there.
James, that happened to my Nana back in the day. She watched Psycho and she couldn't shower for a month. She had to have her dad like hang out in the bathroom while she was showering to make sure that no one murdered her in the shower.
Oh my gosh. That's terrifying.
Yes, James. It was absolutely terrifying. And she was traumatized for a very, very long time. Which is always crazy because that knife never goes in. You could have sworn it went in, but it never goes in. Ever. I think there's like one, they actually did it like a frame by frame in like a YouTube video at some point. And I think there's only one part where it kind of appears that it goes in, but you could have sworn it went in. They could have sworn. And it's so funny too, is about your experience. Zach doesn't get traumatized by horror because I don't think he's ever been traumatized by horror. You had Friday the 13th on when you were what, 2?
Give or take.
Give or take 50 feet? Yeah, that's about right.
I just grew up with all these movies, so it didn't really matter to me. I've been watching these since 2 years old. Video games and movies, just anything violent, graphic, or horrifying, I've seen my entire life. So there's nothing you can really throw at me that goes, oh no.
Yes, yes, he
makes. I just love it all. I think it's fun.
It is fun. It is absolutely fun. So you started off at that young age. So what happened next with your journey with horror as you moved into your teenage years?
I would say it was just, I was constantly at my cousin's house because my parents did not get along and I didn't want to deal with it. So I just hung out over there and his parents were always busy. And so we just watched anything that was on HBO, Cinemax, Showtime, you know, so we were watching like the Tales from the Dark Side and that kind of stuff. And so I just really fell in love with everything and it just kept going from there. And then, you know, as a teenage boy, I don't know if you know this, but horror movies had a lot of boobs. So right there, you know, we watched anything we could, you know? and so then, yeah, at some point it's just what you watch and totally ingrained. And pretty soon you're talking about it with your friends and then you just live in horror land.
It's a good land to be in. It's a good land to be in.
Absolutely.
So I'm realizing something about myself. Like, I did not give a shit about the nudity growing up. I just cared about the best ways you could kill somebody, how graphic the movies were. And so I don't know why I'm just realizing this, because, hey, naked women, I love them. I'm not going to complain about that shit at all. You will never hear a peep out of me about that. But that was not my concern then. My concern was, how's Freddy going to murder this child now that's annoying as hell? How's Jason going to beat the shit out of this camp counselor? Pinhead, when Absolutely. Are you going to bring the chains back?
Yeah, for real. For real.
I just love the many ways of murder. I was a psycho as a kid. Anyways, but that's besides the point.
Yes, it was. Yes, it is. Moving on. All I was going to say is who needs porn when you have horror? It's got everything. It's got all the dirty stuff and a little bit of the horror and a good story, kind of. It has a story. Most porn doesn't have any story. This has a story. The quality kind of goes up and down depending on what you look at. But that being said, we don't watch Halloween 5 for the good story. We watch it to collectively go, what the fuck was that?
Absolutely.
I think that Halloween 5 is probably more convo-fucking-looted than Halloween 3. And I know everybody has a huge hard on for Halloween 3. Five is just a fucking disaster. I don't know what the fuck's going on in there. I really don't. I still, you know, it's there's just some movies that I just accepted in life that I will never know what the fuck happened. Veronica.
Oh yeah.
Veronica. Never know. No, I will never know what the fuck that movie was about. No idea. I think like it's Danzig's wet dream. I don't know. It's confusing. It's just, I don't know. There's blood and boobs and some video and I guess that was it.
It was a movie.
It was a thing. It was very much a thing.
And that's why I hate when people are like, "Well, was it good?" And I'm like, "Whoa, buddy. I didn't watch this because it was going to be good, all right? Like, it's ask like, me about why I watched it, and let's go from there, you know?"
It's like it's like that, what's the Marvel movie? The Black Panther, when he's like, it's always the meme, like, we don't do that here. the question you want to ask is, was it entertaining? Not was it good, was it entertaining? These are questions. These are very important questions to ask.
Was it worth the watch?
And sometimes the answer is yes, even though it's an awful movie. Perfect example, Batman and Robin.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I still quote that movie all the time, and that doesn't mean it was good at all. You know?
It was terrible.
It just means the puns were ridiculous, so... And you have Alicia Silverstone with her little, "I'm going to turn you into compost." You know, like, I don't know, just like even the delivery is just so ingrained in me. It's not that it was a good movie.
Oh, James.
And yet I think about it all the time.
Oh, James, I have something for you, sir. I invented I didn't invent it. I won't take full credit for it, but I stole things here from there. I have a drinking game for that movie. I did this drinking game once with an old friend. Who, by the way, was an alcoholic. He left with half an hour left of the movie. hands. He's like, I have to go home. I'm done. I have to go home. He left when Mr. Freeze like takes over the telescope thing, and then we got to that point, and Bane's doing the bomb, and he's like, fuck it, I'm done. Okay, so anytime a grappling hook goes off, take a drink. Bad genitalia, take a drink. You have to chug a drink when the bat card comes out, or whenever Coolio is on the screen.
Oh man!
And then of course Mr. Freeze puns Poison Ivy, and here's where everybody gets it. If you didn't groan at the grappling hooks, that you'll groan at this every time Bane states the obvious. So like boom, every time that happens, you're fucked. And if you really want to fuck with your friends, you can add in take a drink every time somebody's on a wire. And you'll be dead by the time the movie's over.
Are you trying to kill people? Like, is this your own version of a slasher, except it's in real life and your friends are dying?
I would be dying too because I participated. I don't make anybody do anything that I wouldn't do my damn self. So I was a participant in this. It was a rough morning the next morning.
I'm picturing this more like Saw. Like you pretend to pass out early and you're just in the middle of the floor, and then you rise up at the end and you're like, haha, you're all drunk, and then you just close them in and leave.
I lock the basement door and I'm like, game over.
I really just want to see you rise up and be like, all right, everybody, freeze.
James Vinny.
Fantastic.
My roommate and I, who are dear friends, we went out to Vegas. We almost got thrown out of an ice bar because we made so many ice puns while we're in there. Literally, like, shouting from opposite ends of the bar, hey, Vinny, what killed the dinosaurs? And he'd be like, the Ice Age, yeah, lol. Can you be cold, Batman, like this glass?
Dude, we're gonna get kicked out of the bar if we ever go. Oh my god!
I just want to come watch that.
I'll
just wait outside and time you.
Dude, it's only been 2 minutes. Yeah, we were really annoying.
It took one sip, and they already hated me.
The guy from the bartender was a millennial like us, and he still hasn't forgiven Joel Schumacher. So we were asked to leave. Anyway, back to the realm of horror for just a second. So, I obviously... by the way, we laughed just as much as we're doing right now with James, so you're in good company.
Sweet.
Oh, yeah, he's fantastic. So
I caught part of the episode, but I didn't see the whole thing. Continue.
Yes. Yeah, us, like, laughing through the entire... It's amazing that a podcast got done. Because within the first 30 seconds, we were dying laughing. We couldn't... It's a miracle.
Mark, be professional. God.
We were not professional on that podcast at all.
No, we were not professional on Dennis's first podcast.
Yeah, well, that's true. We had a dear friend that is a mask maker, and he made a giant purple monster penis. And there was four of us together that were podcasters and him. There was four jackasses and one professional. We were all like, let's play lightsabers. We were making the sounds, too.
Amazing.
Guys never grow up. We just get more money and get better toys. That's all.
That's really true.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So a lot of people are massive fans of horror. We love it. It's great. But not everybody goes and takes it into an art form. So let's start with writing. How did writing start to enter your life? You know, and maybe how did those worlds of horror and writing mix?
All right. I've never even really thought about it. So, I guess it was kind of like, I told you I hung out at my cousin's a lot, and he was a really big horror head. And so, like, we would just start, like, trying to outdo each other with stories and just kind of, like, freak each other out or, like, more so probably freak his sister out, like, tell her stories and scare the shit out of her. But it was a competition between us of who could scare her more, right? And I think it really started there. And then it's always just been one of those things where the stories are there, whether I want to write or not. And I went through, I don't know, probably a 3-year time where I didn't write at all. And it was almost worse because it was always in my head and it was always growing and it was always talking to me. And the only way to get it out is to put it on paper, right? And I have dealt with a lot of mental illness, trauma, just different things like that, which obviously heavily leads itself to horror. And yeah, so I think that was just like a way to get it out. And then I slowly started to realize that most other people who are into horror also have a lot of fucked up shit in their life. I can curse, right?
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Oh, good, good. Anyway, one of those things I should ask first. But yeah, so I feel like everybody has these fucked up things, and it just kind of like builds a community. And I tell people all the time, you know, I do a lot of Comic-Cons, and horror is always the group of people that's trying to give to others and trying to help each other and trying to take care of each other. And we write these really terrible things because we want them to happen to not real people. And when they happen to real people, none of us are cool with that. And maybe I don't spend enough time with other genre writers, but I don't see that as much. I see a lot of me, and not the community, right? Like even one of my closest friends is Danger Slater. And Danger and I will be at a con, and if somebody comes up and they start talking to him about his books and they don't like any of them, he's immediately like, well, do you like slashers because James has Fat Camp, or do you like creature features because he has The Cassowary? And I don't see that with anybody, you know, like horror is the only place I see that happening where we're like, we're not in competition, man. Like horror people will buy 400 books in a single day. They don't give a shit. You know, we're not in competition. It's all let's find the thing that you're looking for. And so I think, that's a long way to say finding this like just brotherhood of other people who feel injured but also want to keep others from feeling that. It just kind of blossomed into, hey, this is where I belong.
Yeah. The you know, one of our dear friends, her name is Mar. She runs TMB Horror.
TBM.
I have dyslexia. What are you going to do? The TBM Horror. And she runs out of Spain, and she had a great quote about the horror community, especially because she runs a podcast as well. And she says, when I talk to people in like the fantasy genre or any other genre, and she asks for an interview, they're always like, why? And then the horror community, it's always, why not? And there's just an amazing, welcoming attitude. It's so fun. Like, I mean, Zach and I have gone on and on and on about how much we love the horror community. We had earlier on today a guy who has an app dedicated to horror called Slasher. If you're not familiar with it, and you're not on it. He's unbelievable. And it just
was it Damien?
Yeah, it's Damien. Yep. Yeah, it's Damien.
He's awesome.
Love Damien. And I remember just a perfect, very quick example. My girlfriend, my fiance now, is an amazing horror artist, and she really didn't know how to get into like the cons and like selling her art and everything else. And she went to one of the cons with the purposes of talking to people, trying to make some connections. And she's like, I can't believe not only how nice people are, but how willing they are to help and give guidance. Like, hey, I'm not telling you what to do, but this is what I did. Hey, let me get you the phone number right now while I have a line of 20 people waiting to sign my stuff. Let me hook you up with this guy that runs this other con that I haven't talked to him in a while, but let me connect you with him so you can do better. She's like, I would have never ever expected them to be nice, but I didn't expect them to actually be willing to help in that regard. And I'm like, baby, that's that's the horror community. That's just how they are. They're just great 100%. And wonderful people.
And I feel like there's this thing that happens where people think that the horror community is just what Twitter is. And they're like, man, it's all infighting and people pissed off about this and this thing over here. And I'm like, no, man, you got to go to a con. You have to feel the energy of people just that you would never think want to hang out with you. They don't care what level you're at. They're just like, oh, you're into horror. You're one of us, you know? And I just highly encourage anybody who is trying to get in at all or is in and just wants to grow contacts, hit cons, man. The only thing, we're all really good at sniffing out fakes. So go in genuinely. No matter what you want, just be genuine, treat people like they're human, and they will treat you like you're human. I have literally gone to a casino with Tony Todd.
That's awesome.
I shouldn't have been able to do. I was at a con he was at. We were hanging out. We went to the bar. We were hanging out, just doing whatever. And then he's like, let's go to a casino. And we were all like, okay. And we did, you know, and it's not even, it doesn't even have to be that level. Like I had similar things like your fiance, you know, like when we did Spirited Giving last year, Stephen Graham Jones was our headliner.
Nice.
And I literally was like, oh, here's my dream lineup, right? And SGJ was at the top. And someone else was like, oh, yeah, I know him. I'll write him. And I was like, okay, buddy, whatever. You know? And then he just writes me and he's like, yeah, I'll do it. And I was like, what? And then not only that, Stephen Graham Jones, if for anyone who doesn't know, is on a level where he doesn't have to care about anybody. He's up here now, right? And he sat in the audience. He didn't stay backstage. He didn't like, you know, wander off on his own. He sat for every single performer, had his hands in his lap, was locked in and legitimately reacting to their readings and their Q&As. And it was the coolest thing I've seen because you don't have to do that. And he's so giving and so into what everyone else is creating, and he's just a fan at heart. And that's, to me, that's the horror community overall, just still holding on to that fan piece of us, and we all want to see the next great thing, you know.
Absolutely. And you know, all I could think of is like a social media post with you. What did you do this weekend? I shot craps with Candyman. What did you do? It's so funny too. And also, perfect example is what just happened a few moments ago when I was discussing Slasher, and you're like, oh, Damon, the horror community is like a small town. Like everybody knows everybody. Yeah. I it's amazing on how much connections and through lines they are just because everyone talks to everyone. And it's insane to think about. Like I'll run into people and I'll talk to them, especially in the central area. It gets real tight over here. But you know, as you even expand out, people know a lot of people. It's crazy how much it's so much like a small community.
Oh yeah. And even you know, just it's not even necessarily knowing everybody or even knowing that the person you're talking to is who they are. Like some people I have seen or even experienced myself where you're talking to somebody and then you're like, oh shit, you wrote this story? I love this story. You know, like, and like, my personal example is John F.D. Taff. He wrote this story that was in Shadows Over Main Street anthology. And I'm talking to him one day and then he mentions it in passing. And I was like, oh my God, you wrote that. That was my favorite story in the book, you know? And it's just weird how these like little pieces that are important to us in our lives, all of a sudden we're like, oh shit, now I know that person, you know, or now we're at a con together, or how many times it's just been like some other author and you're like, oh man, my buddy talks about this guy all the time. We have to hang out with him, you know, that kind of thing. And God, I love that so much.
It's great. Even when it's an embarrassing situation, like the one I just thought of, I'll share it. And Zach already knows it because he was there. Zach and I are both filmmakers. I've been acting for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And I actually met Zach on his senior film
audition specifically.
And I was actually in another horror film about a year before that. And we were in a basement that was very, very dirty. And it was a whole scene where it was going to be very, very bloody. I just bought new pants. And I had recently seen a documentary about the third Indiana Jones movie, The Last Crusade. And it's a scene where Sean Connery and Harrison Ford are both tied up, and Sean Connery was like, you know, it's pretty hot in here. Like, that's terrible, Sean Connery. You know, can I take off my pants? You're gonna shoot me from the waist up, right? It's like, it's super hot in here. Can I just take off my pants? And like, yeah. And then Harrison Ford's like, well, shit, if Sean Connery's gonna take off his pants, I don't want to look like a bitch. So I'm gonna take off my pants. and I was thinking about that, and I'm like, it's really hot down here. It's July. I don't want to ruin these fucking pants. I had like regular boxers on. I'm like, can I take off my pants? And Zach's like, sure, I guess. I did that.
No,
and
it wasn't a sure, I guess. You were crying because you didn't want to get blood on your jeans, you fucking wimp.
I didn't.
You knew there was gonna be blood and gore, and you're just like, just, oh my god, I can't get my jeans
I
dirty.
Just bought
it's
them.
It's cold, wash them, you fucking princess.
I was a little bit. Anyway.
To shoot this guy in his fucking underwear, I'm like,
you know
Jesus.
What? I found your location, all right? Stop bitching. I've saved
you
your
weren't
ass.
Making that day any easier. It was already stressful enough. God was literally against me that entire weekend, and on top of it all, with all the dust we inhaled, me and you specifically, because we're the stubborn assholes who decided, nah, we're not going to wear masks, probably have cancer that is slowly building up and is going to kill us 10 to 20 years before our original due date.
I said 1 year. It wasn't that bad. But anyway, so I was sitting in this chair, and one of the camera ops, her name is Jill, who's become a great friend, right before the camera was going to roll, she said, oh my God, I recognize you. You were in that movie that I saw last year. You were great. I'm sitting there with no pants on right before action. I'm like, thanks.
I just realized she said you were great in that movie.
I wasn't, but it was, I won't mention the movie, but it was, it's not my shining crowning achievement to say the least, but yeah, that was one of my embarrassing moments of being recognized, right, when I probably didn't want to be recognized.
We still wonder why she recognized you with your pants off. That's yeah, where me and David sat there like...
I was going to ask.
I didn't have my pants off during that other movie, so I don't know why she just decided that was a time to say, hey, I recognize you. And I'm like, Ed, like, did you hack my webcam? What did you do?
I remember me, David, and Marcus looked at each other like, what does she know that we don't?
I was never that
info.
I was never that desperate for money. I can tell you that. anyway, I really, really want to talk about Fat Camp.
Sure.
I've
heard of it.
Yes, I would certainly hope so. I fucking love this book, man. Really, really, really dug this book. I read it over the course of, you know, several months, but then I actually went back and did the audio book as well, just in case I missed anything. It was, but and I mean this in the best possible way, it was the best crossover between The Burning and like Friday the 13th Sleepaway Camp and also Heavyweights from the 90s. It was the best mm-hmm. crossover between all of those. It was really nice to read something where teenagers sound like fucking teenagers. Every single conversation that they were in, I was like, no, this is actually real. This could actually happen. There was nothing superficial about it. There was no forced agenda about it. There was nothing that, you know, of course it had a point in a very strong and powerful message, which I really dug, but there was nothing forceful about it. It was just about real people being caught in a fucked up situation and real good people that have a lot of problems. And I really enjoyed it. And Sarge is Zach's spirit animal. I will say that Sarge is 100%.
He was without question my favorite character.
It was a tie for me between fucking Obi and Sarge. I loved both of them, and for very different reasons. Like Obi would be a person that would be like in our social group. Like it's mm-hmm. yeah, it's the movie aficionado to say the least. And all the storytelling. So I want to hear, like, how did this idea, like, come to pass? How did you, you know, evolve into this? It's just really cool.
All right. So, I mean, Fat Camp is every fear that I had growing up, right? Like, I was overweight. You know, you're always like in lust with the girl that you can't get, right? You know, or whatever. And then because of the teenager that lived next door to me, I was terrified that some guy with a machete was coming to slaughter me at some fucking point, you know? And I love parodies. I love satire. I love anything like that. So it really started as more of a parody and more satire. And then it was just like, I got to say this other thing to get back to this. So my buddy, please, Vincent Cava and I do this thing at every con where we randomly throw each other ideas, right? And we will just make up like the most ridiculous shit, but then we go with it all weekend and we're just always building on to it, okay? And in fact, camp started that same kind of way, not with him, but with another friend, where it was just always like, oh, you know, it's going to be the running boob jiggle, but very different. Or it's going to be the group shower scene, but nobody's going to be happy about it. You know, and like, pass me the shampoo, buddy, you know, and and so it was very much in that vein. And my ex-girlfriend, Andrea, was super into it, but she was also like, look, I know this is stuff that's actually important to you. Like, have you considered making an actual story out of this and like doing what you normally do, which is make fun of things so that you can deal with them? And I was like, yeah, you know, that's cool. And I kept working on it, but I would put it off for a while. And she got stage 4 breast cancer. And when she died, I literally went, I never finished this thing for her. And I sat down and I wrote the whole thing in 22 days, I think, something like that, which I'm normally a super slow writer. So that was unreal. And yeah, and then it became what it is. And I think the thing I personally love most about Fat Camp, besides Obi, is I love that with this terrible thing that's happening and with being overweight or whatever else, that's not Philip's problem at all. Philip's problem is that he's stuck on the fact that his dad died and his mom sucks. And on some level, he wishes his mom died and he still had his dad, right? Like, that's what it's really about. And then she's like, you're not good enough. You have to go to fat camp. And so he's already in this shitty situation. And then somebody comes along and is slaughtering everybody. And he's really kind of like, you know what? It doesn't fucking matter. I suck. But then the people he cares about are there. And I truly believe that if this was real and Seth wasn't there and Nicole wasn't there and Emily wasn't there, Philip would be dead. I 100% believe that, right?
Absolutely. Like, 100%.
Because he needed that thing to fight. And I feel like that's all of us. Like, I feel like anybody who's like, oh, if I was in this situation, I'd do this or I'd do this. Or you talk to me, I'm always like, oh, I would be the first one to die because I would just fall on the floor and cry. But if somebody I loved was there, it gets really fucking different, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I wrote the dark version of Fat Camp, and then I started merging it back together with the group shower scenes and Sarge talking about people's little tiny weenies. And my favorite feedback that I got on it when my mom read it, she just calls me, and my mom hates everything I do. Like, Philip's mom is about my mom 100%, right?
Jesus.
I literally had a file called My Mom's Version, which was the story she got to read, which toned down Philip's mom. Like, I just took out some paragraphs, right? But that's who it is, honestly. And so my mom reads her version, and she calls me, and she's like, I have a question. I was like, what? Great. Where are we going with this? Like, I'm thinking of all the kills or like different shit. She's like, what is jerking your gherkin? And I was just like, I don't want to talk about this at all. Like,
Google it.
So then a couple years ago, I went home on vacation and my mom put gherkin pickles in the fridge. And I was like, I know you think you're fucking hilarious, but I'm not biting on this. Like, I'm not going for this. So, yeah. It really came down to, like, just hitting this traumatic shit Philip's going through. But also, I'm just a really big fan of utterly ridiculous situation with an actual emotional story. And that's that's fat camp, man. A bunch of overweight teenage boys being slaughtered by a guy because his wife cheated on him. You know, like
I wasn't gonna spoil it.
Spoiler warnings, everyone.
Okay,
he said it. We're in the clear. We can talk about the whole story now.
Because we had to have a conversation.
You can talk about all of it. I don't care. It's
okay. Because that was
really
one...
fast. On that note. Like the reviews I always get are like, oh, I figured out the killer too fast. And I was like, I totally told you who the killer was. I didn't think it was a mystery. Yeah,
That's kind of what I figured. The only thing that I wasn't 100% sure about was whether or not his wife was in on it. But once I heard the whole cheating, I'm like, oh, okay, that explains everything. That, yeah, because I'm like,
because for a while
I was wondering, I'm like, who the fuck's the chick that got murked in the beginning? I haven't, and then, oh, okay, yep, there we go. Everything makes sense now. But the moment he gave Emily that smirk, when she's just like, oh, yeah, you go call him down there. I was just, yeah, all right, yeah, you ain't fooling anybody, buddy. Oh, you called the counselor's office and called the EMTs. Please, Sarge, come on, man. Please, no, Sarge, come on. This is obvious. Come on. Screaming at him, man. I'm like, come on, buddy, you're killing me.
I mean, that's how exciting that this book was. I've never, like, audibly yelled out it during a book, though, like I would a horror movie. I would be awesome. Talking to myself, and my fiance would be next, like, "What are you talking?" I'd be like muttering. I'm like, "Yeah, like really, we're gonna do this bullshit?" What are you doing, man? Come on. That's the experience I was having. I gotta ask though, did you know a Sarge, or is that just something that came out of your imagination? I'm actually genuinely curious.
So, it's many things. First off, it's very much it's my dad's sense of humor, but my dad wasn't like as vicious as Sarge, right? Like it was more fun. But
fair enough.
It's also it's a nod to the drill sergeant in Full Metal Jacket.
I had a feeling
because I totally just felt like God, he would have been amazing as Sarge, you know, and. And then it just kind of grew from there. It kind of just became this thing where my buddy that we would throw it back and forth with, like, that's what we always went to, was like, how can you insult each other? Like, what's the, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know. Yeah.
And also, too, is I was going to ask you a question, because, and I guess we're already in spoiler town, so fuck it. Did you, how did the idea of, and I loved how you did it, and why, but I want to know why you did it. About you separating the main story from the kills. I really liked how it did it because it actually gave, like, we're over here in, like, kind of fun teenage romance, like, you know, bullshit over here, but, and then we're gonna stop everything and we're gonna get real serious with the kills. I'm very curious about, like, about why that was a conscious choice and what went into that.
So that comes down to, I don't know if it was a meme or a quote or something. Somebody said the reason that people in horror movies act the way they do is that they don't know they're in a horror movie. And so if you think you're in a rom-com, you're going to react very differently than if you think you're in a horror film. And it was also that I just didn't think Philip would stick around. Like, he already wanted to leave. So the first time somebody's dead, I figured Philip would have been like, oh, I didn't like that kid, but fuck him, I'm out of here. And so I had to keep him away from it, you know, like he had to be so stuck already by the time he finds out. And so that was part of it. But yeah, it really started with the people just don't know what they're in. And I'm fascinated by how, like, you can live next to somebody and there could be domestic violence going on, or they could kill each other. And you always get the, we had no idea those girls were in there. You know, you get my favorite video of all time, the Dead Giveaway song. I don't know if you've seen that on YouTube, but check it out if you haven't.
No, I haven't.
We'll
look it up.
It's a guy who was next door to some girls who were being held captive. But then somebody, like, put it to a song instead, and it's just fantastic.
Oh,
so, yeah, look up Dead Giveaway.
Was it the Amanda Berry thing?
Yes.
Yeah. That guy. That guy. Did you know McDonald's gave him, like, a lifetime, like, card so he can get free McDonald's for, like, the rest of his life?
I love that dude.
That dude's hilarious, dude. I like the. But fuck, regardless, that man's a fucking hero. And he deserves a goddamn medal if he hasn't already got one. He got the McDonald's card, but somebody needs to give him like the key to the city or something. Because that man's
he
a hero.
He can get McRibs year round. Oh. The rest of us cannot.
Is that necessarily a reward, though?
I mean, it depends on him. Yeah.
Fair.
What did Larry Cable Guy say about the McRib? He's like, you know why they only have it for a select amount of time? Because it takes that long to hunt down whatever the fuck that animal is that the McRib is made out of.
My theory was always you have to have time to forget why you don't eat the McRib. And then you're like, oh, McRib, I used to like that. And then, you know, it starts all over again. So.
I think you have the most accurate answer, my friend.
Yeah, that's pretty damn accurate.
I take one look at that thing and I go, that ain't a fucking rib. I don't know what it is, but I ain't touching it. No.
So by the way, like, how did...
Yeah.
Did you ever get, like, was there ever in a situation in your childhood where you have... when you were ever invited or offered to go to a fat camp? How did a fat camp specifically like get into this conversation? Because that's a very specific type of thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, so I'm very curious about how that came into being.
Yeah, that was really just about the satire of how we could mess with the nudity in horror films and make people not happy about it. So... and then it just became this thing where it was like we were just constantly throwing ideas at each other, like, you know, if he stabbed me with something, like, your knife might get stuck in my stomach, dumbass. Like, way to go. Yeah. And so it just kept growing from there. I will tell you, the reason that the killer has cut off sleeves on his sweatshirt or hoodie or whatever is because I hate the New England Patriots and I wanted Bill Belichick to be the bad guy in everything. So
that is so amazingly specific. That's like, that is like really like, that's, you know how like that's like the level of like, you're so vain kind of level of a person, yep, writing a fucking song because they're that pissed off. You're the Alanis Morissette, yep, of the horror community author. Like, you were that pissed off about this.
I just don't understand.
It's this weird thing I do with my writing where I just put in little tiny things to entertain me. Like, there will be lines that don't mean anything to anyone else. It's like something my friend said once that cracks me up. And then people are like, why is this in here? And I'm like, just trust me. It's there. It's fine. You know, so it's the same kind of thing. It's just there to entertain me.
You know, I think the one positive too, I got to give it to, and the part that I really love though, was the relationship between Philip and Seth and then Philip's sister. And, you know, and them and how he balanced still being best friends with him and, you know, and him dating his sister and then also trying to be a best, mm-hmm, friend and a brother at the same time. I really, really loved that. Because I think that to me was probably the most, one of the most human parts of this. And it was just so funny. I really loved that relationship between him and Seth. Because I could feel how much they were best friends and how much they really,
yeah,
relied on each other. And like you said before, you know, yeah, he'd be fucking dead if they weren't there. But I do like, and then, yeah, also too is, I know this is kind of a toss off, but I actually liked that Philip and what's her name didn't get together ultimately for the long haul, that they actually ended up just dating for a little bit. Cause like that to me, like, seems way more like, you know, it was way more like an infatuation and like way more of like a little crush, mm-hmm, and then, you know, evolved. And then they figured out, oh, well, we really don't have that lot in common. But it was always, yeah, Seth and Philip's sister that were always going to go the distance and actually be in a really solid relationship and keep going. So it just, there was just,
oh, yeah,
so many elements of how real it was.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Andrea, the ex-girlfriend I was talking about earlier, was my best friend's sister.
Oh,
so I've been Seth, you know, and yeah. So I think some of that just like, none of that's about us so much as it's influenced by us, you know?
Sure.
And I don't know. It's really weird for me because I'm an only child and siblings are utterly fascinating to me. Like, I'm always like, you don't have to hang out with him just because you guys used to rent the same apartment at different times, you know? And I'm talking about wombs. Anyway, the whole idea is just crazy to me. Like the way siblings will put up with each other when they utterly hate each other, or how some become best friends and are utterly inseparable. And so, yeah, so I think I've just spent so much time watching my friends and their siblings that I really felt like Philip and Seth are kind of based on my desire on some level to have a sibling, but also always using friends in that position. And yeah, so I'm super happy to hear you say that came across well, because I wouldn't say that siblings are my strong suit.
No, being a person who has one is definitely, and also too, having two sisters is definitely, mm-hmm. And then Zach also is.
Oh, you have two.
Yeah, he has three.
Yeah, I have triplets.
They're literally triplets.
Evil. Evil.
But he's not bitter.
You're not missing anything. Trust me, it is more stress than it's worth.
I
love him, but holy hell.
Especially being the older brother, like you really gotta, like it's weird. And I know that Philip's like the younger brother, but like you still have to play brother, and it gets exhausting sometimes to try to deal with that bullshit.
Yep.
But Zach, and I know that you read it as well, and you had a lot of fun and really enjoyed it. Anything you wanted to add or ask?
I honestly don't know.
I just
really love the book. It's a great book. And mind you, I don't read too often. I'm very like particular with the stuff I read. I'm more like I listen to stuff, mm-hmm. and all that. So I mean, the fact I was able to get through it is a testament in and of itself. I sat there, I got through it in I think 3 days. Yeah, just about 3 days. And I really enjoyed it. Like I said, Sarge fucking loved him. I'm also glad he survived. I think he would have been able to kill, you know, George a little bit easier than what was let on. But overall, still a very great story.
Yeah, dude. And yeah, just Sarge is so fucking great. Like, I mean, like just every insult and everything else. And I think, we're filmmakers, and I was like, the only thing we would probably add is Obi cracking a joke, because I know that one of the lines was like, this is like Friday the 13th. I know Obi would have, it was actually Zach's line. What would he say, Zach?
This isn't like Friday the 13th. This is like fucking sleepaway camp. Get your shit right, all right? Not everything that takes place in a forest is Jason, goddammit.
As like at best, it could be The Burning, but it's a lot
just
more.
Just add this to the script real fast.
By all means,
it's yours. It's yours.
I did write the screenplay, and I immediately went, you know, this is film instead of a book. And so I kind of veered away from all of the more realistic kills that are in the book, and they got fucking crazy instead, right? Like the kid who purges all the time, he takes a toilet snake down the throat, and then the killer, you know, starts cranking on it. And
nice.
You know? So like it went way darker really fast. But there's more jokes, and my favorite joke that's in the script that I don't think is in the book, is Obi talks about getting his name, and he's like, oh yeah, no, my parents were huge Star Wars fans, and I was literally conceived during a Star Wars marathon. They're not allowed in AMC anymore. And, yeah. So.
Oh my man. God! Zach and I had an argument about Obi though too the other day when we were talking about the screenplay. Where I was like nah, I would want him to live, and he's like, nah, he should die. But I was like, nah, man, I would have.
Look, I was gonna say like I think he still needs to die. He doesn't need to die that way with just a machete to the head, just out in that field. But I still think he needs to die. If anything, I would have him actually get into some sort of like lightsaber make believe fight with George. Just I think that would be more fitting. Or like, how about this? Like he gets a broom to try to defend himself. He swings the broom, the machete cuts through it, and just gets right in his neck. And then the damn machete gets stuck. It's like, God damn it, this is like a fucking lightsaber.
I mean, that would have been awesome. Which, by the way, all totally possible with me. Like, I wanted it to be more like the end of Scream with Dewey. The I wanted you to think he was fucking dead, and then he comes out, you know, at the end. The because I really love the character, and that's somebody that I would have wanted to stick around, and that could have been a perfect opportunity to pull a Dewey with him, get him like just fucking like wrecked in the fucking back, and then he's done, and then you see him at the end, you're like, holy shit, he's alive. The and you know, see him get carried away by the paramedics at the end. The you know, I would have dug that. Anyway, the we're talking about theories of a screenplay that you've already written. Yeah. So this is us. This is
I mean, you know, it's in progress, and I don't know what's gonna happen now with the way things are where they are.
Fair enough.
Strikes tend to kill things that are that are happening. So we'll see.
Am I allowed to ask this? Is it attached to anybody yet, or is it just you're writing it and it's okay.
Not.
Then at the go ahead.
It's
someone's considering it. You want to just leave it at that?
Okay. One producer. There we go. We'll go that route.
So, okay. How about we talk about this whole, because I don't know the full details of the strike. So what are the details of the strike? Like, what are screenwriters allowed to do and not to do, I guess, is the question I should be asking.
Or what's
I don't fully know.
Okay.
So a lot of my screenwriting friends are basically anything that's not currently in production, like all of that stuff is frozen. Okay. Like, they don't touch that, right? And but like, they're still working on stuff. It's just stuff that they're working on. It's not attached to anybody. It's not, you know, requested or any of that kind of stuff. Obviously, I don't know everybody. I don't know what everyone is doing. But overall, I just, that's just what I see.
Okay.
All right,
that
enough.
Wasn't a great answer. I'm sorry.
No. It's fine. You know what you know, and you don't know what you don't know. Like that, I figured since you were a screenwriter, you might know a little more than me because this just started like, what, 2-3 days ago, give or take, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's also like, it's so different for like people on shows or versus making a film. But then it also depends on which studio or. Like, were you making an indie film? Because if it's not a WGA film, then you're not in that anyway, so it's not affected. Like, there's all these different levels of things, and I don't understand most of them. So
no, I agree.
I just have a screenplay manager, and I go, hey, what are we doing? Well, we're not doing that right now. Okay, cool.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just under the mindset that I like working with my own scripts. Just make things simpler for me. I know how to write my own stuff, so. This shouldn't be a problem for me anytime in the future, at the very least. At least I hope. But I don't know. I'm not, you know, big holly jolly yet. So we'll see when we get there.
Yeah.
Indeed. The and slightly shifting gears here. You had mentioned earlier on that you are in a podcast. So how did podcasting kind of enter your life? Because again, this kind of goes back to the original one about talking about horror. Not everybody takes it into art form. So I'm curious about how podcasting kind of touched your life and came in.
All right. So it was very similar because my co-host is one of my closest friends, Don Guillory. And we used to write for a movie review site. And so we did like a lot of the advanced screenings and stuff, right? And then we were the only people we could talk to about it because no one else we knew had seen it. And so we would hit the screenings, and then we'd go to Dave and Buster's because it's next door, and we'd hang out there and talk about stuff. And we are both very overly political in many ways. And so social commentary is really huge to us. And he's a history professor at the university level as well. So like, this is the stuff he thinks about all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. And so those conversations just became very, like, we'd go over what we liked about the film, but then that was over quickly. And it became like, oh, well, this theme was crazy because it's kind of reflecting this, even though it was made a year ago and this happened yesterday, you know? And so then we started doing it as a panel at conventions. It was just horror as social commentary, and we talk about like Get Out or whatever was out at the time. And we would just constantly pack the room with this panel. And if there was nobody in the room after us, like our panel went over by an hour and a half one day, like on top of the panel. So it's like a 2.5 hour discussion on this stuff, right? And we were like, oh wow, people want to hear this. And he's like, we should do a podcast. And I was like, Don, just because I'm a white male in my 40s doesn't mean I automatically get a podcast. And but yeah, I do. And so I agreed. I was like, look, I don't want to do this forever. Like, I don't even know if I would like this. I'll do 13 episodes. That seems hoary, right? You know, 13.
There you go.
And then we just recorded our 195th episode plus an additional 30 some Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episodes we've done. So I guess that's what I do. And like I said, in March we passed a million downloads now, which is nuts.
Dude, that's awesome.
But we get, you know, like I think the biggest thing I got from it is it got me through the lockdown times.
Sure.
We really hit it. We started in 2019 and we were starting to hit our stride just as lockdown sort of happened here. I mean, they never really did, but you know, but like cons were all canceled. So all these people who needed that outlet or were used to constantly talking about this stuff were totally willing to come on our show. And then, you know, that just helped it grow. And also it really helped me realize that thing I was talking about earlier about how giving this community is and how we do care about each other. And it was, let's hop on and talk for 2 hours instead of just being depressed all the time or that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
What has been some of the feedback that you've gotten, like some of the reviews and some of the feedback that you've gotten from FatCam? I know you mentioned something earlier with, you know, obviously with your mom reading it and, you know, and the, you know, the jerking aside, I'm curious on what some of the feedback has been on the actual book.
So the number one thing I did not expect, because I expected all these others I'm about to talk to, but I did not expect constantly reading. I had absolutely no interest in this book, but wow, it was so good. And I was always like, well, do we have to start with that part? So that's been a little weird, but really cool because I know they mean it in a good way, you know. But yeah, most of the feedback has either been very much about like how strong Philip is or the you know, just the overall grief that he carries and that kind of thing. And then the opposite feedback is always, I knew who the killer was right away. Oh, or my personal favorite, teenage boys don't talk that way, which I have three teenage sons, so I'm just going to go ahead and call bullshit on that.
Are these reviews coming from teenage girls or people who somehow skip the teenage years altogether?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure. I read a lot of... maybe that was true when you were a teenager, but nowadays, and I'm like, no, nobody, I have the internet. And I don't know if you know this, but comment sections are interesting.
Yes.
And, but yeah, so like that one always cracks me up, as well as people say it's a really misogynistic book, which is just hilarious to me because Philip is supposed to be the direct opposite of that, but he's still a teenage boy, so of course he's checking out the super hot counselor lady, you know. And it is being told to you by a 17 or 18 year old male who that's what they think about. I'm sorry, I'm 45 and that's what I think about.
And also too is, and you know, hold on, all right, I got something to say about this because that really just pisses me the fuck off. There's a difference between misogyny and having a strong male figure. This is an excellent example of what every young boy should aspire to be, which is be a good fucking person and protect the ones that he loves. It's really that plain and simple. And I'm sorry if people think that that's misogynistic, but I and this is my podcast, I can tell them to go fuck themselves, but I'm gonna tell them to go fuck themselves because that's what every young man should actually aspire to be, which is, you know, overcome your fears and insecurities for the greater good of the people that you love. I can't think of a better example of what a man should be than that. There's other things and other nuances with that, but But that's what it is. Yeah. So no, you didn't write a misogynistic book. You know, you wrote an how-to guide on how a teenager should behave and the quality of a human being, of what they should be. And by the way, too, is, you know why I love Sarge? Because Sarge was a hard ass and he was a ball buster, but he was also a good man. And he actually genuinely cared about these kids, and he wanted these kids to become better and grow up to be good men. This wasn't a story about, you know, and this is you. This is what writers do. They speak from personal experience, and you knew what it was like to grow up to be a man and grow up from a teenage boy and grow up to be a man. You're sharing your life experiences and your struggles of what it's like, because that's all you can do. There are plenty of wonderful women who have wrote about the female experience of growing up as young ladies and then into women, and that's wonderful. They should. There's plenty of examples, you know, out there. One of them is Little Women, and I've read it several times. I love it. Different time period, but absolutely love the novel. But that being said, no, this is a shining example of what a man should be. It is to set aside your fears and triumph over evil to protect the ones that you love. That's it.
Wow, I love that. Thank you.
Yeah. So yeah, and fuck those people. Yeah,
anyway. Well, and I was always like you got to look at it realistically too, right? Like Philip has been in this camp with just other overweight teenage boys.
Yep.
And then this counselor doesn't even have to be hot, right? Like, she's just the only woman they see. So they're all going to be in love with her.
Yeah.
It's just that simple.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was like, oh, he's not listening and he's checking out her boobs at this point. And I'm like, yeah, because that's what he would do. That's
yeah. And she's aware.
Like, it's like if you said it's not diverse enough. And I'm like, I see you haven't been to Iowa before, you know?
Yeah. This didn't take place in Chicago or Detroit or any other major city. It took place in corn fed fucking Iowa. So no. And also too, is if they actually read the book, they realized that she made them vulnerable and really got to the core of what their problems were. She did her job as a great psychologist, and it's super fucked up that, you know, what happened. And like, you know, I think that, you know, yeah, I mean, she may have made bad choices in her personal life, you know, on that side. But besides that, that doesn't take away from her ability to be a great counselor and help these kids, like, you know, and also too, is I think that's the, and this is where I'll leave it, I think that's the really part I liked, that everything felt real. Everything felt real in this, you know, and I think that's also what helped you too with separating the kills. Cause you're like, this is the fantastical part. And here's the real, you know, experience part. And it got real interesting when those worlds started to merge at the end of the book. And you're like, oh shit, it's getting crazy. But no, everything felt very, very real. And she's actually a great character, and she really helped these kids deal with their shit, man, and then move on to hopefully becoming, you know, well-adjusted adults.
Absolutely.
So, totally forgot what I was going to say. Zach,
do you need me to pick up your pace?
Yes, I do. Squirrels.
Squirrels.
Anyway, So you had mentioned that you've done a lot of screenwriting and everything else. Was that just a natural transition from writing novels, or did you actually do screenwriting first and then get into novels? How did that work out for you?
I have always been way more film obsessed. Even with everybody I know who writes horror books, I'm still I'm the movie guy. And that doesn't mean that I've necessarily seen all the films everyone else has seen. Like, I saw Jaws for the first time like 4 years ago. I'd seen all of it in different pieces at different times, but I'd never like sat and watched it, right? But then I'm like the guy who's like, oh yeah, you should see Terror Birds because blah 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 blah, you know, and everybody's like, I don't get it, why are you watching this stuff instead of these classics? And I'm like, well, I already know what happens with those. Like, have you seen bad CGI sharks? You know, like, so,
For the record, that is the title of the actual movie. Bad CGI Sharks. I know, because Dennis wants me to watch it.
The Zach is a shark obsessed nut. The he will watch.
Oh, nice.
He will watch every bad shark movie to ever pass. We recently had an awesome guy on the podcast, it's Bucket of Chum podcast, exclusively talking about shark movies. And man, did they have a lot to talk about. I mean, Zach's seen Dick Shark, for Christ's sake. The so
I have not. I'm gonna see that now.
It sounds more entertaining than it actually is. I'm warning you, whatever your preferred choice of drink is, have it on standby. It'll make the journey so much easier.
The we had a lot of fun talking about 47 Meters Down as well. The I don't know. Oh, yeah. I don't know. You've seen that as well?
I haven't seen the whole thing. I think I saw about half of it with one of my friends, and then I had to leave his house and go home. But yeah,
they they scream in a very interesting way. I will say that.
Less of a scream and more of a certain type of moan.
Every time they screamed, it sounded like they were coming. That's what it sounded like.
It sucks because that movie could have actually been good. It had a great premise, a great terrifying premise, but oh my god, every bad decision you could possibly make and just poor it's like okay, moving on.
No, it was just crazy. Like, I mean, like, to the point where I had to turn down the volume because I was worried my neighbors were gonna think I was watching porn downstairs. It's like every time I'm like, I'm gonna turn this down. I was really toasted one Halloween, and I ended up watching that and laughing my ass off. So it sounds like you're really big into like really silly horror and like, you know, it like kind of bad horror, that all that stuff. What has been, please.
No, I was just going to say, like, I, even more so recently, I've just kind of been hitting this point where I think I'm in horror overload. And so watching funnier stuff actually just hits me differently. And I think I really love like the marriage of comedy and horror.
Oh,
because they're both built on the same premise. Like horror is essentially a joke. It's there's the buildup, and then there's the twist that either makes you laugh or scream, right? And I always say it comes down to bodily functions, because you're either trying to make people laugh till they piss themselves or scare them until they shit themselves. And so
put that
it's all about what you're trying to accomplish. But comedy also makes you feel safer, so that then when the bad shit happens, it just feels like it hits harder for me. Mm. Whereas something that's dark the entire time, I start to kind of phase out a little bit, like, because there's never that up and down, you know, it's just, oh, I'm scared. Oh, look at that. I'm just fading in and out here. But anyway, So I think that's why is I just like that marriage between the two.
Oh, I've always said that horror and comedy have the same beats. That's why Jordan Peele was so easily able to step into horror. Which, by the way, though, if you actually watch Key and Peele got a darker edge to it. Like they definitely have a little bit more darker thematic things going on. So it definitely makes sense that he was able to make that jump. But what are some of your favorite horror comedies while we're at it?
Tucker and Dale.
Oh,
definitely.
Oh, I love it. I love Tucker
everything
and Dale
about that. You know, just different things like that. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Of course.
Return of the Living Dead. That's huge to me, because that's hilarious and then so messed up. But I'm also fucked up. So like, I think Saw is really funny. You know, so what do I know?
After the third one, it gets real fucking funny. Because then you're just like, yeah, you're like how ridiculous can we make this? It's almost like after eventually it gets to that point with Final Destination as well. Like, how ridiculous could this get? In what bizarre way could we kill people?
Well, the thing I love most about the later Saw movies, except 7, because I refuse to admit that one exists. But the thing I love about the others is how hard the writers worked to thinking that they could make these movies make sense together, but in a retroactive way. There's no plan at the first one for Saw 5, right? Like, it just becomes okay, well, where are the holes in these other ones that we can fill in? And it fascinates the shit out of me that they put in the work to attempt to do this. And so I absolutely love 5 and 6 because of that, because I'm like, how did you even find this piece to try to claim that that's what was happening over here? And it doesn't add up fully, but holy shit, they put so much work in for no reason. It's like they didn't know that every other franchise ever is just like, because this is part 7, fuck you. You know, like,
dude, I
remember Saw's like, let's make this work.
I remember I believe the last movie before the I don't know, the last two recent ones, I believe it was 6. And it turns out that the guy from the first movie has been involved essentially the whole time. And I went, get the fuck out of here. Like, that was the first, like, I've been watching these movies ever since they started releasing. And of all the absurd shit I've seen, that was the moment where I just threw the and I went, fuck you. You bull, just fucking really. All right. This. Just give me more kills. Man. Don't just put a montage of gore on the screen, because that would make more sense than the bullshit you're trying to pull right now.
Oh, and by the way,
I
was just gonna say, by the way, if you know anything about the history of horror, never try to fix timelines, because timelines are a fucking disaster all by itself. I mean, I remember what was it? Somebody recently was trying to explain the timeline of Halloween. And then also trying to explain the timeline of Friday the 13th, which was a fucking disaster. What is that? What did you say about the timeline for Friday the 13th?
Friday the 13th takes place 30 years in the 80s.
Figure that shit out.
Every time I say that, people...
Can we get a shirt of that? We need a shirt of that.
I want... You know, I actually might do that, because it's like, every time I tell that to people, they literally stop and think, they go, oh. Because it's like, all right. Part 1 takes place tail end of the 70s, 79, maybe into 80, all right, whatever. Then 2, 3, and 4 all take place within the span of 4 days. But then part 5 takes place, I don't know, maybe 10-something years later, who the fuck knows, that movie kind of doesn't matter. They kind of threw that one off. Then part 6 takes place maybe like 10, 20 years later, and then part 7 somehow takes either 10, maybe 20 years later after that, because Tina was a girl, Jason was already underwater at that point, and now he's above, so it's an adult or teen, I don't know. And then we get to part 8, they go to fucking New York, it's still the 80s somehow, and now we're in part 9, we finally hit the 90s, now, and then we got, alright, Freddy vs. Jason, that takes place in 2004, then we get to Jason X, which is in 3000, and fuck it, because
That's an actual year, James, did you know that? It's called 3000 and fuck it, that's an actual documented year, the of when that took place.
Friday the 13th is like the one series where I'm like, I don't give a fuck about lore, Jason just needs to have a mother who died and kills camp counselors. That's as simple as it needs to be, because everything else, nothing is consistent. It makes no sense, but I don't care, because I love it and it's awesome, and Jason is just badass.
Or God forbid you actually have the fans try to give you a timeline of which movies to watch first, because that one's a fucking disaster all the time. I remember we had a girl from Pretty Killer Podcast on here, and she was explaining that the
Halloween timeline.
It wasn't the Halloween timeline. It was
what order to watch it for her
mother. And she's like, well, you want to watch 1 first, then go to 2, then skip 3, go to 6, then go back to 5. I'm like, you sound like fucking Charlie Day when he's putting the fucking shit together and Always Sunny. just like that. Like that, or like Channing Tatum in 21 Jump Street when he's tripping balls in the fucking chemistry class. Yes. If we get to the DeLorean to 88 miles an hour, then we can get Michael back out of Halloween 5.
Dude, explaining some of these timelines is such a... God help the person trying to explain the Texas Chainsaw timeline, because every sequential sequel is the true sequel. I just can't wait for Texas
I was
to...
Talking about...
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was talking about how the Saw writers tried too hard to make things make sense, right? The people who tried even harder than the Saw writers are the people who did the novelizations of Jason X. I don't know if you're aware that these exist, but there are 3 or 4 books where like one of the books is the Uber Jason from the end, right? Except the other part of him that got cut off, somebody cloned it and created a new Jason, and Jason has to face Uber Jason in the novelizations, or maybe it was the graphic novels, but like these just get fucking more and more insane. Like that's like the normal one before it goes completely off the rails. Yes.
I believe that's a comic, and I can't, the problem is that comic is so expensive, which is the only reason why I don't own it and haven't read it, but I would love to, because once again, that idea is so fucking absurd that I'm like, Jason versus,
this is why I miss when producers did a lot of coke, because everything was a good idea. Everything was a good idea.
We got way more entertaining shit in the 80s. That's just a fact.
We heard today that there was a potential crossover between Fast and the Furious and Jurassic World. And I'm like, why did that not happen? Why did that not happen?
I would actually go see the next Jurassic movie, or God forbid, the Fast and Furious movie, if you combine those. That idea is so absurd that I'm like, I gotta see it. I gotta see it.
Like Alan Grant Jeff Goldblum was like nature like finds a way. It's like, no man, it ain't nature. It's family.
No. I want to
see that shit for like.
I want to see Vin Diesel hopping a fucking ramp, jumping over a T-Rex as he's giving him the finger, screaming family.
I just want to see one of the little velociraptors driving a car. I think that would be amazing. It's like they're the new threat in town.
fucking velociraptors driving Ferraris. They're also going around saying family.
Dude, fuck it. Let's do the
pull out like the sweetest car ever. And he's just like, I spared no expense, motherfucker. You know, like.
No, fuck it. Awesome. Let's do the Deep Blue Sea thing, and then let's make the Raptors like even fucking smarter to the point where they can drive cars. They can open up doors in the regular Jurassic Park. Fuck it. Let's have them drive cars.
Oh my God. It's like, why are we not funding this?
You pull up to a garage, and there's a raptor putting nitrous and looking like a Mishkabichi. And he's like, I need my Nas, man.
The real twist is at the end when the car turns into a robot and you find out it's also a Transformer.
Yes!
But one of the dinosaurs is also a robot, like, you know, so it's just,
and then it pans out and then it pans out to showing just the screen, and then it's an audience with just Shia LaBeouf in there going
no, even better, it just shows Michael Bay in space and he's like, yes, and the earth explodes,
the whole universe. The whole fucking universe.
I was gonna say it would show Michael Bay, but he would look like the South Park guy all covered in ectogasm, you know.
Oh my god. All we need is like coked out like South Park Mel Gibson to like complete this saga shirtless and everything. Oh, my nipples! Like, and that's it. That's the end of the movie.
Riding Cocaine Bear.
How many more crossovers can we fit in?
Whoa, we can go for days, sir.
Somewhere right now, there's a CEO in Hollywood just having massive orgasms and he doesn't even know why. So.
He's like, I felt the disturbance.
Trying to enjoy a nice dinner.
He's like, I felt the disturbance in the force. Somebody's coming up with a shitty idea. We must make it.
That's not a shitty idea. That's a fun idea. That would be so, again, it's so absurd. It would sell like hotcakes because everyone would see that and go, what?
I must see it. I must see this disaster of art. I must own it.
Our log line will just be, wait until you see Nick Cage's character. That's it. We don't tell you what he is. We don't tell you where he's at. You just have to wait.
That is the perfect hook.
Wait until
you see what we did with Nick Cage.
Oh my god.
The end of the trailer, just leave that. Everyone will lose their shit. Like, all right. Pre-orders are going to sell out day one.
Nicolas Cage will return. He was never in the movie, but he will return.
Oh my god.
And he played replace fucking Memphis from Gone in 60 Seconds to be in that movie, because just to keep with the car theme, we're gonna throw him in there.
What a threat, dude. There's so many people who are going to watch this podcast and are not going to be old enough to know that reference.
This is like half of these references.
No, they'll get the Transformers, the Jurassics, the Fast. Uh-huh. You say Gone in 60 Seconds, they're like, the fuck is that?
It's a really awesome...
It's not our fault that they're too young to have spent 30 years in the 80s.
Yes.
Oh my god.
I wish I got to be there for just a little bit.
Man, I wish.
My Nana says all the time, she's like, I don't remember the 80s. don't ask me to tell you what happened in the 80s. I don't know. I don't remember. I was partying too much. Your father owned a bar at that time, and I was working at that bar. I don't remember what the fuck happened.
No idea. Christ.
No idea. No clue.
I don't know, but I do know that it did not look the way they portray it. Everything was fucking brown. Don't buy into this.
Oh, Technicolor?
Neon
No. Everything was. nobody could afford that. You know, the
wood paneling and brown carpet. Ugh.
People's clothes were Technicolor, but not the wallpaper. Like, people did that on their clothes. Like I remember I asked my dad about that, and he's like, yeah, the wallpaper, that's all bullshit. The clothes and the hair. 100%. The people had rulers and shit to see how high they had aquanets.
From the kids. I want to write an 80s slasher where they can't hide from the killer because they're always against brown walls and just like glowing. You know, he's walking around with like a fucking black light. Like, I see you, motherfucker.
Just glow in the dark, like, oh my god.
And for those who don't know who Aquanet is, that's the reason why we have CO2 issues in the atmosphere right now. It's because of fucking Aquanet.
And the abundance of
that shit poked more holes in the ozone layer than a diesel engine, bro. The fuck knows what was in there.
I'm surprised they didn't all light each other on fire constantly. Just like walking by smoking and it accidentally lights somebody's hair.
Oh, it happens. Just one wrong ember. Oh my god!
Now that's
they turned into Sweet Tooth and Ghost Rider like it was nobody's business.
By the way, that is a fucking kill for you right there. An 80s kill right there. And light some chick's hair on fire. Completely
unintentionally, too. Like the killer just, like he's smoking, he throws a cigarette the wrong way. All of a sudden. What the fuck? Oh, well, shit, that's a happy accident.
this is going to be a light work tonight, bud. This is going to be a light work tonight.
Man.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Ridiculous.
I think still to, like, of, like, satire and parodies, like, I think Scream and Cabin in the Woods, though, are still my favorite, especially Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely love Cabin in the Woods. Still one of my all-time favorites.
There's just so much that's good in it. And Cabin in the Woods has one of my favorite scenes where they have the big whiteboard.
Oh, yeah.
And my buddy and I, one of the scripts that we wrote that's not being considered by anybody right now, we literally used Kevin as the bad guy because he's on the board in the background and we wanted to know who the fuck Kevin was. And so we were like, oh, we're going to write Kevin. That way one day someone will write this and be like, who's Kevin? And they'll look it up and think it was us. Ha, ha, ha. You know?
That's actually pretty genius.
That is pretty genius, actually. I still love, by the way, the one that people miss all the time is witches and sexy witches. Two very different species. absolutely love that. Oh, and then, I have a question. This is a question I ask everybody when it comes to Cabin in the Woods. Who the fuck would have a button that does that? Why does that button exist?
You don't?
And by the way, there's not even a little like plastic locky thing on there. Like, it's just chilling. Like, somebody could have sat on that fucking button accidentally, like a goddamn Star Trek. Like, literally sat their ass and be like, oh, I just fucked everyone. It's just because I sat down.
The terrible design.
Oh yeah,
I mean, I kind of expect that from corporations, so I guess it makes sense.
Or some very disgruntled subcontractor said, "Fuck these people! I'm gonna put this shit in, and I'm gonna have it only be handled by some intern. Something bad is bound to happen." It's crazy. Like that movie, I loved it so much. I spent half that movie when I first saw it being like being very like whodunit and like investigator, and then like when they reached that scene, I became an anarchist at that point. I was like, bring down the system. Fuck everything. Kill them all.
Absolutely.
I think, and also too, I'll say this one last thing about my opinion about that. I think that if I had to pick like best sound design for any scene in a horror movie, it's that scene when they stop the gunfire and you just hear the elevators moving. It's still until this day, one of my favorite sound designs in almost any horror movie. And like you just feel the oxygen gets sucked out of the room. And then right when that guy, and then the ding of the fucking elevator, you see that guy going, oh fuck. And then just bloodshed. And then you just only see the end of what the fuck happened in that room. It was, oh my God. The, and then also to all the Left 4 Dead, tie-ins that were supposed to happen, but never actually did. The, I know Zach's brought that up a couple times with the Left 4 Dead shit.
Yeah, it's tragic, but oh well.
Yeah, but, that's still one of my favorites, and then probably Shaun of the Dead. Those are always, that's always fun.
Oh yeah, Shaun is great. I think I also just I love like the campy 80s horror that like you can tell people were just like just making things to make money and didn't care at all. And I always just feel like there were some movies where there was just like some guy who was like, nobody's watching us anyway. We can get away with this, you know? I don't know if you guys, this is not 90s by any means, but I don't know if you've seen Pieces. But
heard of Pieces,
Pieces
never
is
seen
one
it.
Of these movies. So Pieces is one of these movies where their tagline is literally, it's exactly what you think it is. And it is. It's exactly what you think it is. But there's something so ridiculous about like some of the camera angles or just like the amount of blood that comes out of people when it shouldn't, you know, or I feel like people were just making movies just to make money and nobody checked on them. So then people who were bored just put in crazy shit. And that's the stuff that also just overly entertains me.
Yeah. You know, and go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
All I was going to say was about 80s horror in particular and something that I miss, and I think it's greatly missing. And I get that, you know, obviously some of the stuff is, yeah, it's cash grab. But also, too, the positive side of that, though, is that there was so much competition between those guys. If you watch the documentaries from, you know, and them talking about each other, it was never about like, ooh, let's do a remake or let's, you know, reinvent or reboot this story. It was always about this explosion of creativity, and there was a massive amount. They're all great friends, but they were all competing with each other. Mm-hmm. They were always trying to top one another about how crazy it could get. And I think that that's something that's sorely fucking missed from today, is that nobody wants to compete anymore. And like, that was the fun of it. And then the audience of horror fans, not maybe the audience by and large, but the audience of the horror fans always won. Like, we always won. The crazier that they got, the better it got.
And even the worst ones were so good compared to everything else that was being shoved down us on network television or whatever, because it was just fucking nuts. Yeah. And we didn't have the internet, so that's what we had, you know?
Yeah. And then all the action movies that were around during that time as well, you know, were just big and loud and, you know, and the, you know, I think like that's probably encompasses the 80s is bigger is better. I think that's like that just that's the 80s. Big hair, big movies, big explosions, big. Fuck it. Let's do everything big. Like everything is big. Let's just do it big. The no matter what it is. You know, go big or go home, man. And that was their mantra. And you know, and has its problems, but I think sometimes it has a little bit more positives than it does negatives. Because ultimately, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, we're gonna enjoy it and we're gonna have a good time.
Well, and I think one of the things I don't like today is everybody instantly can give their opinion on everything, and so then people don't even give something a chance. And I come to Malignant. I don't know if you guys saw Malignant or not, but like it was just this huge Twitter war where half of us were like, oh, it's fantastic. And the other half were like, this is absolute trash and it's this. And And all these people were like, oh, I'm not going to watch it because this guy doesn't like it. And number one, I fucking hate that so much. If you want to watch something, just watch it. Like, the worst that happens is 10 minutes in, you're like, no, fuck this. And you turn it off, you know? But like, Malignant is such a weird fucking movie. But then, like, I felt like it was kind of that same thing of what can we do that's crazy and what can we do that's out here. Like, you weren't getting these fantastical kills, but like, it was just trying to do something different than what's being done. So I loved it for that. And it was just very disheartening to just watch people just shit on everything or not want to be a part of it. Like I love trauma movies. I totally get why other people might not, you know, like, I don't really need to go online and talk about why it's shit. Or like, I don't like The Witch. Other people love The Witch. They think it's like the greatest movie ever, and I hate it. And I try not to actually talk shit about it because for me, it's just slow and it doesn't hold my attention, you know? And I think it's weird how social media has blown up to the point where those opinions overcast why we don't like something. And just because you don't like it doesn't mean nobody should fucking watch it, you know?
It's true. It kind of goes back to horror in general. And I was talking to Zach about that. We were watching something recently, had something to do with a whole other situation. But we were like, you know, people were like, when did you like it? And I'm like, and again, that's not really the point. Was it good? That's not really the point. Was I entertained? Fuck yeah, I was entertained. It was entertaining. Mm-hmm. It wasn't necessarily good, but I was entertained. I was worth the hour that I watched it for. So I think sometimes people need to put it into that perspective. If you put it into that perspective, you'll be much more happy as a human being. Just overall, mm-hmm. like, were you entertained? Was it worth your time? Did you have a good time? And also, too, is I always feel, too, with those type of horror movies, watch it with a group of buddies because that's always even better. You guys can laugh and commentary. And, like, that's always the best. Like, you know, I'm like, oh, my God, did you see that shit? And then, you know, just make and make fun of it. And, like, yeah, I guarantee you'll be entertained. Like, just go with that route, and you'll be much happier as a human being. I know Zach will definitely back me up on that.
Absolutely.
It's just a better approach than doing that. I'm also in agreement with you 100% about people just saying, you know, believing everything that somebody said about something and then just immediately assuming that that's going to be your opinion. That yes, I believe it on both counts of people saying, oh, we love this movie, and then you would watch and you're like, this is trash. And then vice versa. There's plenty of movies that are out there that people say are trash, and no, they're pretty great. They're really great. Or maybe they're not great, but at least they're entertaining.
Yeah, like two recent examples for me are Cocaine Bear and Renfield. Cocaine Bear was literally made for me. Like, I'm the target audience. They were like, we're making this for James Sabata. No, but like, I had the best time. I laughed literally through the entire movie while no one else in the theater was responding. And when people tell me they didn't like it, I'm like, yeah, I could see that, you know, like, totally. I can see why some people would fucking hate this, you know, and then Renfield, I had a friend ask if it was worth watching. And I was like, it depends why you're going in. Like, there's unnecessary backstory on a cop, and there's like plot points that never fully add up, and there's this and there's this, but I had the best fucking time because that's not why I went there. You know,
like, we all went there for Nick Cage. Like, let's be honest. We all went there to go see Nick Cage do some crazy shit. I saw it as well. I thought it was fantastic. And I thought Nick Cage got a little bit of redemption of playing a better vampire character than his first outing in Vampire's Kiss. Yep. So he definitely did a much better job. And also, too, is that honestly, most of the I'm a massive fan of Kingsman. And it reminded me a lot of the stunt work and the violence, and it reminded me very much of that style. So if you like Kingsman, you're probably really going to like Renfield. I think it's overall was a really, really solid fucking movie. And yeah, I mean, just like what you like and see, you know, and don't be afraid to explore. Yeah, I think that's if we're going to have an overall message here. Don't be afraid to explore. That's why I love Slasher. You get hooked up with so many people in the community, and you'll see posts all the time of just random fucking movies. That people have posted that I would have never heard of unless I was just scrolling Slasher. Yep.
Oh, yeah, totally. And the other thing I love is like if I post like, oh, this is the movie I'm watching right now, slasher always gets the most people going, oh, I love that, or oh, I haven't seen that, what's it about, or just like it's such an actual engagement about that. I don't love everything about slasher. I wish it was like a little easier to go to people's walls or read their stuff or that kind of stuff or follow specific people more or that kind of thing. But overall, the thing I love about slasher is that it feels indie the same way the movies I love feel indie. It's not polished and it's not perfect and it's not not everybody's gonna love it. But that also keeps a lot of people out who shouldn't be there, so that's all right.
That's true.
I'm with you on that. So we always wrap up every podcast with a question of the podcast where I come up with a random question that I just thought of about 20 seconds ago. And as per tradition, guests get to go first, but you do have the option to pass, but no pressure. No one has ever passed. Not that I'm, you know, you could pass Have we had somebody that has actually passed? Really? Why? Two out of 100.
One of the episodes I watched, he said there were two. So I was going to ask how many were two.
And I probably every podcast say that we've never had one, but he's always like that we've had two. And by the way, thank you for making it to the end of the podcast. Because I know for a fact that you actually watched the full thing because that happens at the end of a podcast. So thank you for that. So this could be horror or non-horror, but I think it's very appropriate considering you.
Bring it on. I'm not passing. I'm going to hand the ball to Marshawn. Let's do this.
What is the worst novel to film an adaptation that you've ever seen?
Oh boy. So the one that's had the most trouble is Salem's Lot. They've never gotten it right. They've never made it work. They try and they try and they want to so badly and they just can't. And I hope somebody fixes that one day. As far as ones I've read that I think would be super hard to film, God, I don't even know. There's so many books that could be decent adaptions, but like trying to get them 100% right. I don't know. I thought I had one and then I solved it in my head. So let's just go with Salem's Lot for now.
Fair enough. I can get behind that. Zach?
So I've only read a handful of books in my life. Star Wars related, Alien, Predator. Those are mainly the books I read. Sure. Other than that, there are two shark books. Well, your book as well, but there are two shark books I have read. Jaws, but I love that movie to death. The other one is The Meg. God, that movie was fucking awful. The book, so much better. They actually go into scientific details about how the Meg would actually look like this translucent underwater badass creature. The way it actually comes up in the book. The way it comes up in the movie is it's like the submarine goes to that like cloud layer or whatever and it just kind of follows through. In the book, it eats another megalodon, and as it's eating the megalodon, it's pushing its way up using the megalodon as kind of like a shield to get through the methane, and it just bursts through the fucking cloud layer, and it's like, that is way fucking cooler. Everything about the book is just way more badass and gruesome, and you look at the movie and you go, yeah, this is fucking trash. Who approved this?
Probably the same people that didn't go along with our Fast and the Furious, Jurassic Park, Gone in 60 Seconds.
This is why we need cocaine in Hollywood again. Okay?
It's probably the mine is definitely Ready Player One. The that book is fantastic, and the movie was trash. And actually, the more I thought about it, and the more I watched it again, and I'm like, this. Wow, what a disappointment to the love of the book. The book was so much better and so much more detailed, and also too the super dumb subplot about the revolution in the movie was so fucking stupid. It was really stupid, and it totally it turned the female character into something completely different than what she was in the book. It made her too much of like she's a freedom fighter and like and all this stuff. Like in the book, she's just a normal person that like that's in a really crappy situation in her life and she wants money. The, you know, like everybody else in this fucking little contest that's going on.
Yeah.
And like it, just so much detail that was missed about him as a character. And also too is they spent way too much time in the real world in the movie. The there was I think there was only like two chapters where they were outside of the actual game. The rest of it, they were entirely the movie. The book ended, it, I believe. There was one more scene at the end. I'm sorry, one more chapter at the end that was, you know, outside the book. But the, I would say 97% of the book is in the Oasis. The and overall, the book is just so much better. It's so in every and I never like wanted to be that person. I never wanted to be the person. Like, I heard that shit with Harry Potter for decades about, you know, they would see the movie and we'd walk out of the theater and my cousin read the books. And every time we walk out of the theater, it was like clockwork every year. I'd be like, go ahead. I've heard it for the last 10 fucking years. So go ahead. You please tell us why this great movie was the book was better. Please, please tell us why. The floor is yours, madam. It always became that. Like, and by the way, I wasn't the only person. Like, all of us, entire family, were just like, okay, you go ahead. What do they miss? I never liked that culture because I always had to deal with that, but I could sometimes see their point, especially with this. Like, it was one of those things I'm like, man, they missed out on a lot of shit. I did not, and as much as I loved The Shining did not fit in that whole thing. There was so much more involved in that. Like, you know, they did Monty Python and War Games in the book, and it was much better on how they handled it. I don't know if you've actually read the book.
I have not, no.
I do really recommend the book. The book is great. The sequel is hot garbage, but the original book is great. Highly recommend it. The movie, from a visual sense, is really cool to see. And there are a lot of cool aspects of it to it visually, but from a story perspective, the book's way better.
It was one of those movies I loved, and then I walked out and started thinking about it, and I was like,
And by the way,
yeah, while watching it, it was great.
Yeah. And I think that's the same feeling I had, except even worse, because I knew all the details about mm-hmm. the book in the novelization. So anyway, sir, this is your opportunity to look directly into the camera and tell the good people where they can find you and all of your, yes, very angrily like that. when I get very intimidating, I love it. That works too. That we can tell the good people where they can find you on all your social medias and all your face tubes and sure. all that great stuff.
Yeah. So everything's pretty much just under my name. I'm probably most active on Twitter at James Sabata. Otherwise, jamessabata.com. I don't recommend being my Facebook friend because that's where I unload anything that's pissing me off in the world. And so it's not a pleasant experience for anybody. Outside of that, we have the podcast, thenecronama.com. Always put the, or else it'll take you to another website and I can't guarantee your safety. Let's see. Outside of that, I am at a lot of conventions, and if I'm not at a convention near you, you should ask them to get me there because I want to travel more. I need out of my fucking house. There you go.
I hear you. I hear you. We'll have to invite you to some ones in Chicago as well. And then, excuse me. So thank you, James, so much for being on the Nightmares Podcast, man. We really, really appreciate it. And for all those people, thank you so much for checking out the Nightmares Podcast today. You can find us where all podcasts are available: Spotify, YouTube, Anchor. I think Apple Music. I think we're on there. And of course, if you are watching us on YouTube, if it could be so awesome to stab that like button, smash that subscribe, and click that little dingy bell to be notified every time we drop amazing content right here on MHN. And you can check us out on all of our social medias on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and
Slasher.
That is the awesome application for all things horror. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time on the Nightmares Podcast. Bye, guys.